From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the first day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about a raucous commodity market and trade in Chicago, what's been happening in Washington, D.C., and Anaheim. We'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora, T-Storm out of Chicago. Hear how blockchain might be coming to the pork industry. And oh, so much more. So stick with us for this whole half hour. And then, if you can, come back later in the day to willag.org because we've got a great Commodity Week program set up for you. We'll be joined then by Dan Zwicker as well, along with Dale Durkles and Ray Jenkins and Joe Vaklevic. That'll air here on our radio station tomorrow, some of the radio stations over the weekend. But you can pick it up tonight at willag.org. You can also buy your tickets for next week's All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House there. That's Tuesday at 8 a.m. in the Central Time Zone, 9 in the Eastern Time Zone. Just $30, 800-898-1065. A dozen analysts will take all kinds of things up. You do not want to miss this year's program. Buy your tickets right now.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas now joins us. What a raucous day it was in Chicago. Dan, tell me about what you saw.
Well, as far as ag commodities go, everything is green light. I mean, we've been in a seasonal climb basically since the first part of January. We closed out, depending upon which futures contract, we did close out January in corn and soybeans with some price reversals, monthly reversals to the upside. They both showed upside follow through, and we closed at the top end of the price range during the month of February, and now we're starting off a new month with new highs for the year. So, clear across the board, at least from a technical point of view, you have to be encouraged by that and generally supportive. But now when I take a look at, some of the technical indicators that I look at, then I begin to get a little nervous because we have reached some what we would consider in the technical world overbought levels, which means that the market is ripe for a correction at any time. No one really knows when it's going to come. No one really knows what's going to trigger it. I think for the most part, the commodity action was pretty well closed before the Dow took its tumble based upon proposed tariffs on steel and aluminum. Thinking that we may be, this may be the first step toward a more intense or larger or broadband type trade war. I really don't have those worries, but when you see what the Dow has done over the past 13, 14 months, you look at what the commodity markets have done here for the last couple months. Anything can kind of, it doesn't take much to spook traders' confidence. The dollar is strengthening in value, which is probably a long-term concern toward commodity prices. Interest rates are creeping higher. There are signs that we do have some inflation underneath the broad-based economy, but it's not really hot. I know our generation remembers the 70s. I'm sure whatever's ahead of us is going to be different. No two times in history is exactly the same, but it'll have the same rhythm of some kind. But we don't know necessarily how this is all going to play out, but we both know that 3% long-term interest rates is still abnormally low compared to at least what we grew up with, which is 6, 7, or 8% was not uncommon for car loans and mortgages and whatnot. So we got a long ways to go before we reach those levels. But we have a whole generation here or more that's been used to 0 to 3% interest rates. And I suppose a doubling of that would maybe be a shock to their system anyway. But when I look at ag commodities, I still want to be friendly to the market. Now, like I mentioned, that the technicals are starting to get a little bit overbought. And then when I start looking at some of my cyclicals, I get a little nervous too, because we are in the early time window to maybe record some late winter, early spring, whatever you want to call it, highs. Then we go into a corrective phase of some kind. And then we start trading the growing season. Then we take a look at the planting season. We'll have USDA's March numbers out, planted acres, or the intentions anyway. We'll have grain stocks numbers to see what kind of domestic consumption is happening underneath our feet. I think, you know, right now, like I've mentioned probably a couple times on the radio, is when you get into this February, March time frame, you're probably in the most uncertain time window of the year when you look ahead, because you don't know what the spring pattern's going to be, weather pattern's going to be. You don't necessarily know what the planting mix is going to be. You don't know what the growing season is going to be. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. But as we go forward, that uncertainty window is going to start closing, and it'll begin closing probably with that March 30th report. And then we'll see what April weather is, and then we'll just kind of take 1 week at a time at that point.
And so when we come back and we talk to you in about, I don't know, 40 minutes or so for the Commodity Week program, we'll take up the fundamental side of this marketplace with you and how it differs from the technical side, because there is a big difference. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that. And, of course, we'll see you over at the Beef House on Tuesday next week.
Very well. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure there's the crowd's waiting on some kind of outrageous comment that I might make or so. So
we might have something in mind to help you out, too, so we'll see.
Okay. Whatever, but, you know, marketing, we got to make marketing fun, but we also have to take advantage of opportunities when they come to us.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Okay, very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan will join us for the All-Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That is next Tuesday. You need to pick up your tickets today, tomorrow. I need to give them a good number probably before I go on the air tomorrow afternoon. So kind of would like to have most everybody have their tickets by that point. So if you're going to buy a ticket, get online right now at WILLAG.org or pick up the phone, 800-898-1065, and buy your tickets. There's an awful lot that's been happening in Chicago. The price of corn has rallied. The price of beans has rallied. We have fundamentally a large supply of both of those, both domestically and globally, but technically we've been up on the top side of that. We have things happening in Washington, D.C. The president today, of course, announcing that he expects, and if he does this, it'll be next week, but he expects to come out with a 25% tariff on steel imported into the United States, 10% on aluminum. That is above what his Commerce Department asked or suggested that he should do. Those are numbers that he's proposing at this point, and he'll make some decisions next week about what that really looks like. All of that pertains to the NAFTA trade deals, TPP, and what's happening on the global marketplace and how agriculture moves into it. So we'll try to discern what it all means during the All-Day Ag Outlook next week, and right here, of course, on our radio program, so stay with us. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Do buy those tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We will take up block trades. That's something that's already been put in place by the CME Group. It's an over-the-counter trade that's off the marketplace, and we'll hear whether that's going to have an impact on volatility. We'll also talk about the variable rate storage that could be coming to both the corn and soybean contracts. We'll do that with Kurt Strubar of Advanced Trading. Of course, we'll have a dozen analysts there to talk about the marketplace. There's all kinds of things happening. You won't want to miss it. Buy your tickets now, WILLAG.org. They're just $30. It's next Tuesday, the 6th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That $30 buys you the whole day's event, including the Beef House lunch at the noon hour, and a Beef House coffee and roll in the morning. We open the doors at 8 a.m. Central Time, start at 8:30 Central Time. That's 9 and 9:30 if you're in the Eastern Time Zone. Now, I know I said block trade, but we're going to talk about block trade in a different way at this point. The pork industry is on the leading edge of blockchain discussion, which could provide cost savings and transparency to customers. The National Pork Board is partnering with IBM to discover how the technology will impact and be adopted by the pork industry, including producers, packers, and grocers. Blockchain is a data logging structure that industry leaders say could soon provide detailed animal health information to producers and consumers. At the 2018 Pork Industry Forum in Kansas City, Missouri, National Pork Board CEO Bill Evan offered an explanation of how blockchain data logging may impact the pork industry.
It's complex, but if I can try to simplify it, distributed ledger that cannot be altered. In other words, if you're trying to maintain traceability or tracking of a product through a supply chain, you're able to do that and use blockchain as the base of that. And so companies like IBM and Walmart, obviously in technology and also in food, are really trying to figure out how can they minimize costs. And farmers are going to be part of that because, frankly, we're producing food. And in our case, we're producing pork.
As the technology develops in terms of tracking animal health and performance, he says, pilot programs have tracked animals through RFID tags and facial recognition. Evan says for the pork producer, adoption would be relatively simple.
It can be as simple as a small tattoo on the top of their back and cameras on the ceiling of the barn, and you're able to monitor pigs and their movement. Are they eating? Are they drinking? Are they coughing? The potential of technology is just going to blow your mind. And a large part of what's driving it, sensors are cheap, cameras cheap, data storage is now cheap. The low cost of actually trying to maintain this mountain of data is really driving the innovation.
Producers are constantly finding ways to be more competitive and more productive. Evan says this technology will provide transparent information to consumers, but also allow producers to be more efficient.
Often what happens in the industry is we talk about average daily gain or pigs weaned per sow per year. I mean, we use a number of technical terms from a production side. It's really easy to translate that information over to something the consumer would understand, and that is, if I do X or adopt this innovation, that's going to lower my water usage, or it's going to lower my energy usage, or it's going to lower my carbon footprint in the sense of, because I don't need as much feed.
Evan says there are many questions remaining regarding the technology, including security, use, and benefits, all of which will be answered as the technology develops. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. But coming to us today from the Commodity Classic in Anaheim, that's a big event. I've been watching the Twitter feed, and boy, it looks like you guys are doing a lot of work out there and having a lot of fun, too. I hope that's the case for you, Matt.
Yeah, it's definitely a big crowd. It's kind of interesting. You know, you expect to come to Southern California, and it's going to be hot and sunny, and actually the temperature was the same here yesterday that it was at home, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, there's a lot going on, a lot of buzz about Secretary Perdue being here. I think the general mood, of course, after a little bit of a rally the last few weeks, is a lot better than what it might have been if we'd have had this in mid-January. So certainly a little more festive group, I think, than what we've seen maybe the last couple of years.
Man, this morning you addressed the whole of the crowd, or a lot of them. I think, what, more than 700 in the room as you and Bryce Knorr and a few others took the stage to talk about the markets?
Yeah, we were able to go about 15 minutes, and kind of stake our claim to what's going on with the markets and take question and answer. And there were 700, 800 people there. It was a really good crowd. some really good questions. I think that people understand that the market doesn't always offer us a lot of opportunities. We've got one now, and so people are definitely have their radar turned on and wanting to know what to do with these price levels and ways that they can maybe navigate some of the price risk moving forward. So it's definitely a nice sign.
And when you planted your flag, what stake did you claim today?
Well, essentially, what we're telling folks is, you know, I don't want to get super friendly to the market whenever we've gotten a 90-cent rally in soybeans and a 25-cent rally in corn, because a lot of folks really wanted $10 cash beans in our part of the world. You can sell those right now. A lot of folks wanted $4 December corn. You can sell $4 December corn. And so, you know, here in the last day or two, we finally poked above and gotten to the point where we can make some of these sales. And we're just telling folks, let's not get our perspective out of whack. Make an incremental sale into a rising market, you know, and try to stay disciplined in your marketing plan based upon, you know, your break-even levels.
Yeah, so for most farmers, that'll be making an incremental sale for delivery, whether it's in fall or January at some point, on the cash side to the elevator, right?
Yeah, I think with soybeans, that's an easier thing to do maybe than corn. You know, some producers on corn are maybe interested in, you know, making some sort of a hedge at $4 or above. If you do a true hedge and, you know, if the market does what it's done the last couple of years, I think one thing to do that we pointed out as a panel is buy back your hedge during harvest and then go ahead and hedge the July if you're storing the bushels at home if you've got full carry in the market. And that strategy's worked great the last couple of years. And you know, certainly if we have a decent size crop this year, you're going to be looking at opportunity to do a similar type of scenario.
So I'm going to say that the panel said on old crop corn or old crop soybeans, go ahead and finish those sales out. What are they saying about old crop corn? Because there's an awful lot of that around.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what I'm saying about old crop corn is I want to be doling out bushels as we go. You know, am I going to sell all my corn bushels of corn like I'm maybe interested in on soybeans? Probably not. I think as far as the bin bushels at home, probably a little bit more lethargic. I think there are still chances to see basis. Basis overall has improved. You know, we moved to the May indicator here a couple, 3 days ago and actually picked up a penny or two basis if you factor everything in. And so, you know, basis is not weakened the way you would expect because bushels haven't moved extravagantly. And so, you know, as far as the bushels at home, I'm gonna dole out bushels on the way up, but I'm certainly not going to sell them all today.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much and have fun on your last couple of days or day out there at the Commodity Classic in Anaheim.
Yep, thanks for having me, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, coming to us from the Commodity Classic in Anaheim, California, today. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to buy those tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. WillAg.org, 800-898-1065. It's next Tuesday. The cost is just $30. We're now joined by Mike Tenori. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, let's get right to it. In Argentina, I'd like to know where they stand from your perspective today.
Well, I don't think their rainfall forecast could get any worse than where it is right now. The only question is, how much damage is being done, and is it too late? If you look at rainfall since February 1st, we just went through the driest February on record for their soybeans, and those records go back to 1980. Now, if we start to isolate out the first 15 days of March, we can see that the driest period on record had about a half of an inch of rain, while the number five driest period had 1.5 inches of rain. So we need widespread rainfall of 1.5 inches over the next 2 weeks, not to be among the driest five since 1980. The way the forecast looks right now, we're not going to be anywhere near 1.5 inches of rain. There'll be a couple of thunderstorms here and there through Saturday. Most areas stay dry. A couple more thunderstorms Sunday and Monday. That's one of the better chances. But Todd, we have to keep in mind that we do not have any humidity out there because of the lack of soil moisture. That brings us into next week. Next week, we do have a strong system that will move on through. That happens next Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, so about 7 to 10 days from now. But with that system, once again, a lack of humidity is going to remain a concern. And after that system goes by, it will turn a lot cooler, and that's because it's the first autumnal type of storm system. Think of what we have sometimes in August or September. You sometimes get a big cool front to move through, and then all of a sudden, you can tell that fall is here. That's kind of what's going to happen there in about 10 days.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch that. Come here to the United States. Wheat futures have been rallying sharply. This is because the dryness continues in parts of Texas, Oklahoma, I suppose, Kansas, some of those hard red winter wheat growing regions. What do you hear from there?
Well, on that side of things, we have a little bit of a different perspective, at least as far as soil moisture goes. Now, if you go back to the beginning of January, the coverage of agricultural drought, which we would define as dryness over the last 90 days, was about as high as it had been at any point in our records that go back to 2011. So 7-8 weeks ago, the coverage of dryness was impressive. But there's been a lot of rain and snow since then across a big chunk of the central U.S. The only area that's missed has been the southern half of Kansas and points on to the south through western Oklahoma and western Texas. Our proprietary application shows us that about 33% of U.S. hard red winter wheat production is still unusually dry, having received less than half of its normal rainfall over the last 90 days. So that drought has shrunk, but it's still sticking around the key area in the Southwest Plains. Going forward, we do have a lot of chances for rain and snow in most of the central U.S., except for that one area. Best chances are always just outside that region. But keep this in mind too, Todd. Normally, we don't start to see rains and snows showing up in at least an appreciable fashion in the Southwest Plains until mid-March and later. So dryness right now is not that unusual, but it is unusual how dry it was throughout a majority of this winter. We're going to need rain coming up. There's not much on the near-term horizon, and we'll have to see how that plays out.
And apparently you believe there are some problems in Europe that we need to discuss today as well?
Well, certainly in parts of Europe, it's been very wet there for a majority of the last 90 days, and now we're throwing a whole bunch of rain on some of these areas once again. One of the areas that actually missed out on most of the rain throughout the winter was Spain. But over the next couple of weeks, Spain is going to be hit repeatedly by heavy rain events, and it should lead to some pretty significant flooding in Spain and parts of Portugal, Portugal not being a very important grain and oilseed area, though they do have other crops. Some of that wetness extends into France, Italy, even the UK. So rainfall will be an issue going forward, but kind of like in the US, Todd, it's a little early here. Generally, weather in all these different areas is dominated by what happens 4, 6, 8 weeks from now, as opposed to today.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.